Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Am I Mad podcast. I'm your host, Chris Bogue, and this is episode 21, the episode that's old enough to drink. Saturday Night Live has hired black female comedian Sasheer Zamata and two new black female writers midway through their most recent season amidst controversy about the lack of diversity on the show. My friend Rashawn Scott dropped by to talk with me about race in a world of sketch and improv comedy largely dominated by awkward white dudes. Enjoy! Oh, looky here, it's Rashawn!
Hey, thanks for having me.
Hey, Rashawn, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for coming by.
I'm very excited to be here. This is a really nice setup you have.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, we got coasters and water and my living room. It's real professional over here, you know? I'm glad you're able to come over here today. We have worked together previously in the world of improv here in Chicago. You haven't always lived in Chicago.
No, I just moved to Chicago a year ago, so January 31st will be my first full year in Chicago. I'm from Washington State, Tacoma, Washington. My little claim to fame is that my high school was where 10 Things I Hate About You was filmed.
That's quite a claim to fame. I wanted to have you here. I thought you could provide some valuable perspective because I've been wanting to talk about SNL lately.
Yeah, thanks. A brand new cast member.
Yeah, SNL brought on a new cast member mid-season. Sasheer Zamata.
Yeah.
A black female comedian, which SNL was under a lot of fire for because they had not had a black female on the show for a while now.
Like 7 years since like Maya Rudolph. But there was a black woman on the show like in the 70s. She was on it for like mid-season, like maybe 6 or 7 episodes, and then they let her go.
Yeah, and then they had a couple in the 90s. They had Ellen Cleghorn during the 90s. I don't remember when Denitra Vance was on.
I couldn't tell.
She was on there. Maya Rudolph. But other than that, not really, and nothing lately. And so you yourself are a black female comedian.
Yes, that is.
Improviser, sketch person.
Yeah, that's me.
Yeah, so I mean, just kind of in general, like, I know SNL was taking a lot of crap for this, and then Kenan Thompson made a comment that people got very upset about, that, you know, he just didn't think that there were any black women who were, I think his words were, they weren't ready for it.
Yeah, he made that comment. It was shortly, I think, after the Kerry Washington episode. Did you catch that one?
I did.
So they were making fun at the fact of what Kenan said because, one, Kerry Washington played like a zillion black female characters, and they're like, you know, is anybody else going to help me out? And she's like, no. But Kenan had said, you know, that the women who had auditioned just weren't ready for it. But then in an earlier interview of himself when he said he auditioned for SNL, he said that he was ill-prepared for it, and he happened to get it. So I feel like this is a time where you're seeing more people of color in commercials, in television, and SNL was, you know, under scrutiny for not having black women on the show represented because 9 times out of 10, like, a black man is going to play a black woman character. Like, Kenan's dressed up as Whoopi a zillion times. We were talking about Tim Meadows, who did that when during his time of SNL. And I think I'm excited for her, but I feel like she's also going to be under, like, a microscope.
Yeah, it seems like it's one of those damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of situations, because I've seen some of her sketches. I've been watching her sketches. She seems very funny. She seems very smart.
Yeah, likable.
So I'm hoping that she does really well on the show. But now she's got the increased pressure of, you know, they brought her in mid-season. It seems like almost as like a PR move that they wanted to do, where it's like, oh, you know, we're really getting called out for this now. We're going to bring on a new cast member mid-season. So now it's like all the spotlight is on her. And if she doesn't do really well, then, you know, she's going to get all this shit for it. Because,
like, oh, well, we told you black women aren't ready to be on the show. Case in point, her. Or, you know, she's doing really well. I hope that she does really well. I hope that she just, like, nails it and brings in original material and brings in a brand new audience, because, you know, a lot of the black community don't watch SNL. They don't think it's very funny. When I went home for Christmas break, I was talking to my family about, like, oh, you know, there's going to have these auditions. You know, they had one in Chicago, they had one in LA and in New York, these secret black girl auditions. It's very hush hush, but they were like all over Instagram and they had no idea. They were like, oh, that show's still on. My little brother, he's 18 years old. He's like, what's SNL? And I thought that was, like, crazy because, you know, you and I, who are in the comedy scene, were like, that's most people's dream. Like, to be on that show, to, you know, have that notoriety is something that you really want. And then, like, most people don't watch it. They feel like it's, like, fallen out of grace.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like a chicken and egg thing, too, because it's like SNL is primarily white cast members. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of white dudes because, like, that's the audience demographic, too.
Right.
Like, you're playing to a very white audience. So you have a very white cast. And it's just, like, in general, I kind of feel like the sketch improv world and the comedy world is a lot of, like, goofy white dudes.
Yeah, totally.
In general. And, like, and because it's goofy white dudes, they're making goofy white dude humor, and you get the people showing up to the shows are goofy white dudes,
mm-hmm.
because they're going to see the comedy that they understand. Comedians are making their material around what they know,
mm-hmm.
and it's just kind of this cycle that goes. So it's like, you know, do you make the show to continue catering to that same chunk of the audience, or are you, because I mean, in the world of satire, if you're using comedy to satirize the world, mm-hmm. and satirize pop culture, there's a lot more to the world than just what goofy white dudes think about
it. Exactly. Like, they've got to change their demographic because, you know, I think the goofy white guy is pretty funny. I've been watching SNL since I was a little kid, watching it before I was old enough to really understand the material. But the audience is changing. There are black girls like me. There are Latino people. There's no Asian people on SNL at all. But those are the people who watch this show, who get inspired, who want to be in the comedy scene, who move all the way from, you know, Pacific Northwest, Washington, like I did, to Chicago, which is, like, saturated with improvisers, more like people of color than I've ever seen. Like, I grew up in a really predominantly white town. I went to predominantly white schools. You know, most black people I know are family members of mine, and they're few and far between who actually were in the arts and were successful, or it felt like they could really do something that wasn't just, like, athletics. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. And I think it's weird for white people, too, because I think we're made so uncomfortable by race because we've done a lot of oppressive things throughout history that we don't like being reminded
Chris,
of.
I don't think that you started slavery. I hope you know that.
Yeah.
I'm not in chains or anything in your apartment.
Yeah.
I'm okay.
Well, not yet. But That's kind of the dirty little secret of the podcast.
Oh,
that's what happens before everybody leaves. But in general, I think it's like there's a lot of racism in the country still.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it is... Yeah, I think even in general, the word racist has gotten to the point we're so used to Hollywood depictions of racists, of being like these guys who are like conspiring... You know, again, like, people who, like, do terrible things to black people and, mm-hmm. like, laugh about it because they hate black people. And I think, in general, racism is much more subtle. And
it
I
is.
Think, in general, racism is unintentional. I think there's a lot of racism that's just... It's just kind of ingrained in the society. And it's just kind of doing things as is perpetuates racism in ways. And I think racism needs to be called out. But I think there's this defense mechanism that white people have when they hear the word racist, they think like, oh, you know, a racist is a guy who wears a white sheet and burns crosses and hates black people. And
yeah.
I don't actively go out of my way to hate black people. So they hear the word racist and it's this defense mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you're calling them a bad word. And I don't really think that's how racism is in practical terms.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. Like, I don't want anyone to think I don't call people racists all the time, but when I do find something that's a little, like, offensive, you know, you don't want people to feel like you're putting them in a box or making them accountable for things that, you know, our great-great-grandparents did. That's not at all what I'm saying or what, you know, what you want to... People assume that you are when you call them a racist, or if they're called a racist. But there are things, like, time is changing. People need to realize that, you know, the little things that you say can be misconstrued. Even if I said something to you, like, I assume all white people like 2% milk and white toast. or something like that. That's racist of me. But you're not assuming that I'm like some Black Panther who's going to, you know, raise up my fist to the Nation of Islam and burn down Whitey's house or something like that. That's not what we're saying. We need to be cordial with each other. Realize that everyone functions differently. You can't just assume the widespread of a race is going to fit into this box. I can't assume all white people are going to be the way I think. And you can't assume all Black people are going to be chicken-eating, watermelon-loving people.
I think in general, just like we need to... And I think that the generations, as the generations go on, mm-hmm. we get more integrated. And we think of each other less as like these like really specific different groups. And it just becomes like, oh yeah, this is my group of friends. And I don't really think of them as like, these are the white people, these are the Black people, these are the Hispanic people. Because we've all been kind of just hanging out and, you know, hanging out with each other since we were little kids. Mm-hmm. And so I think the differences are like less pronounced as the generations go on. But I think right now there's like, you know, it's like white people hanging out with white people. And you, I'm sure you know, in improv scenes and sketches that you've been in before, there's this tendency where it's like, oh, there's a Black girl in the group. Now I can do a Tyler Perry sketch. And now yeah. I can do my Oprah sketch and I can do these things. And you get pigeonholed into where it's like, oh, now I'm the Black one in the group. So mm-hmm. now they're going to put me to do all the really stereotypically Black things.
Yeah. And that's kind of how it first, I felt like that the first time I did some improv in Chicago. Like, I didn't really have to deal with that in my college improv and that sort of area because I'd already established myself as, like, I don't play that shit. Like, I'm not going to just be the Black person on your team just because I'm here. Like, I have merit. I've studied this. I know what I'm doing. I can play the scene. You know, I'm very witty, just like any other person. But you get lost. Like, you can allow these men to treat you a certain way on stage if you let them. But if you check that shit at the door, no one's gonna fuck with you later on. I mean, I've had to verbally like pull someone aside and say, hey, you made me feel like shit on stage and I don't really like that. I would never do that to you, so why are you doing it? To be pimped on stage is the worst feeling in the world. You've probably been pimped an improv scene in some point in your life, and you absolutely hated it.
For any listeners at home who don't know what pimping in the improv sense means, how would you describe it? I mean, it's just pretty much like you're forcing your partner on stage into a situation that you've already pre-planned for them, pretty yeah. much. Like, you want them to play the role. She actually, we were watching, before we started recording the podcast, yes. we were watching one of... the sketches from Upright Citizens Brigade. The sketch is just called Be Blacker.
Mm-hmm. So she wrote this one.
Yeah, she wrote it. She's not in it, but she wrote the sketch. And it's that, you know, the whole essence of comedy is honesty. Mm-hmm. And it's coming from an honest place. And it's just funny because you'll get pimped into situations where they want you to be like, you know, big, you know, your boisterous, sassy Black lady. And that's not really who you are, it seems. You're very laid back and you're very, that's not really who you are.
Yeah, but I'm like totally animated just as any other like comedian would be, but I'm not necessarily going to be your, you know, sassy best friend in all of these movies and things. Like, in the sketch, she's in an audition, and she's reading it just like any other person would. It's the first reading of audition, which they keep asking her, we want you more ethnic, we want you more this, we want you more that, you know, dance. And it's almost like a tap dance. Like, they want more from her than she wants to give, or that she feels is necessary for the scene. Like, that... exactly what happened in that video is what happened to me in an audition. Like, I was playing someone's mother, so I played it as if I was my own mother, who's not a sassy Black woman who's gonna say,
could you ad lib a couple lines about cornbread in there too?
I thought this was about dental insurance. Why are we talking about cornbread? Jiffy cornbread is delicious, I want everyone to know that. But that's not at all what it was about.
But it's irrelevant.
And they wanted me, you know, they were like, you know, a little bit more sassy, a little bit more this. Like, I did like a neck roll, as I said, one of the lines, and kind of like snapped my fingers. And they're like, so they were applauding, like, yes, that's exactly what we wanted. We didn't know how to subtly tell her. Like, if they had made a premise in the audition on the sheet of like, we want someone who's energetic, you know, sassy, you know, urban, that's totally fine. But when they kind of blindside you in an audition, that's what really makes you feel uncomfortable. Because you didn't prepare for this. You weren't told, you didn't feel like you were going to be blindsided. And that's the problem.
And it's funny, too, because on the flip side of, like, you know, your racist right-wing caricatures of people, there's also this kind of liberal, like, almost, like, overly tolerant kind of, or, like, it's this way we're trying to be like, oh, I'm so accepting of all these other cultures. And it becomes, like, a pandering thing almost, too. And you get these people who want to come off as very open-minded and very multicultural, and they still have all these kind of racist assumptions about how other people act, how people from other cultures act. So you get those situations like, you know, the open call where they don't spell out that they want you to play a racist caricature, but you step in and they still want you to be a racist caricature.
Oh yeah, there have been times where, you know, they call out some sort of like crazy ethnic name, and I can feel everyone looking at me like, is Rashawn gonna step out and play that character? And 9 times out of 10 I won't. Just to make you feel like, you know, you can't force me to be something that I'm not. And I feel like within the improv community, things are really changing. You're seeing more people, different kinds of people on stage, and you're seeing that a little bit less and less. But on the flip side, I've been hanging out with some of my improviser friends, and people are getting really comfortable and relaxed, you know, talking about like being really relaxed daily and being around all these different people, and it really doesn't matter, we're all in this rainbow coalition, it's like totally cool. Then you slip up and hear something like crazily racist.
Like what?
I found out that through some friends, like, oh yeah, that we used to just call each other like niggers all the time. Like, what? Wait, you casually are just calling, like, did you guys forget that I'm like in the room and that's like not cool? Like, you shouldn't be saying it when I'm out of the room, but you shouldn't be casually using this word, because I don't use that word. I really don't. I think it's like derogatory. It just makes you sound dumb. But people just make assumptions that it's okay. Like, they're so comfortable with race that they forget all the sort of negative things. Like, just like you're saying, like, if we use the word racist, you're assuming that you're some, like, cross-burning person that has that negative connotation. When you call someone, like, the N-word or a Negro or nigger or something like that, it makes me feel like a stupid person. Like, a subhuman who wasn't worth your time, your effort, anything. I'm just here to work for you.
Yeah, that's always one of those ones that you see. I'm curious to hear what you think when you see, like, do you ever see the Facebook posts of, like, white people being like, well, why aren't we allowed to say...
Oh, my God.
And it's like
every Halloween, we have to go through this, like, bullshit of, like, blackface and how come they get to do it and how come we don't? And it should be eliminated and aren't we all just people? Like, it's been run through the mill. If people are offended by it, if a mass majority are offended by it, you don't say it. Like... You know, my grandmother was from old school. She would call white people honkies, like, straight up, no problem with it. She was offended that you call yourself black. You're not black, you're brown. Black is the color of tar. Like, she's coming out of that, like, 60s, like, black is beautiful movement, but just, like, I felt by her saying, you're not black, you're brown, is you taking ownership of yourself and not, like, following in this group of people, which... I get, but there's a sort of community that is a connotation of, like, being black. But when people say, like, how come black people can use the N-word and I can't and blah, 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 it just makes you... Why do you want to use this word? Do you feel like it makes you look cool? Do you feel like it gives you power? Do you feel like it's taking power away? Like, why? Why is it so important for you to want to use this, like, derogatory word?
Yeah, well, and... I mean, white people just had no good racial slurs either. There's no really effective... Because, I mean, there's...
Calling someone a cracker just really doesn't have
Yeah,
that.
It just doesn't hurt, you know? Yeah. And there's, like, there's no good slur against us. So it's like, you get white guys who are like, oh, well, I'm not offended if someone calls me a cracker, so why should they be offended? And it's like, it's just... You know, there's a whole history there.
Yeah, that's not addressed often enough. You know what's funny? It's Martin Luther King's birthday today.
It is.
What? As we're talking about this. But, I mean, just think, like, have you seen The Boondocks?
Yes.
The show? Do you remember the episode where he's talking about, like, if Martin Luther King had, like, come back
Yeah.
And seen, like, the ridiculousness of this world. Not just black people, white people, too. Like, this world is already, like, full of ridiculous things. And we want to say that we're such an evolved culture, how we're so accepting, but we're also very blind. Like, we're not really following in the footsteps of the people who laid out things before us. And it's a shame, but it's also, like, this country is young. It's not really found its footing. And, like, going back to what you're saying about the word, there's no equivalent to it. Like, that was always the thing. Like, yeah, there's no equivalent, so why do you want to say this? Why is it so important to say it?
The only counter to that I can say mm-hmm. is that it's become an ingrained part of pop culture in that, in terms of, like, the music, like, hit songs mm-hmm. in the club, like, if you go out and you want to, like, dance and party all night, that's half the songs that everyone is singing and dancing to, you know? So it's, like, it's that I'm sure you've been in a room where, like, everyone's dancing to, like, Gold Digger or something. And then, like, all the white people are like, don't, you know, can I sing along with it or can I not?
Because I've been in clubs where, like, that part happens and I stop singing just to, like, listen to who is bold enough to say it.
Yeah, because
it's such an interesting thing.
Because it's part of the music that we enjoy now, mm-hmm. you know, and it's like, it's totally not taboo if it's in a song.
Yeah.
And people will all want to enjoy it, but there's that moment where it's like, oh, it almost takes on, like, a different meaning in the song, or it almost seems like it doesn't have the meaning that it does have because it's socially acceptable in popular music. Mm-hmm. So it's like, yeah, what I mean, I don't even know.
I would think, like, the people who are making the music are responsible for that sort of making it okay for people, you know, like. Kanye is kind of a terrible example because he's such a whiny baby who gets to do whatever he wants. And, you know, he's all over the news for this and that and the other. And predominantly, if you go to a Kanye concert, it's a bunch of white people anyway, you know?
Yeah.
And they're so, you know, they flock to him because he's a god now, you know? He's above it all and he's an artist and it doesn't really matter. But there's a lot of, like, rap music that uses this word and I don't think that the people can just blindly accept what one person is doing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and I guess we'll see too as it goes on, but the thing I don't know is, you know, with rap music and everything, will the word become more taboo as time goes on, and will rappers be less inclined?
Oh, I think it's
to
just
use
gonna,
it, or is it gonna,
I think it's gonna bleed into just the vernacular. Yeah. And get to a point, you know, when everybody's all, the races are all mixed up and we're all, like, caramel-looking people who, you can't tell what race anyone is. It's just gonna, either it's gonna blend into it and just be another word, or it'll just get eliminated entirely. But I think that's in the next, that's years from now. Yeah. I don't think, like, 2015, we're officially gonna knock it out.
Okay, so kind of pivoting on that, as you know, I'm a bit of a politics nerd. So while you're here, I want to talk a little bit. In general, the Republican Party is, like, offensive on so many different fronts.
You don't say.
And, like, you know, as me, as, like, someone who's, like, from Chicago and as a young person and as a liberal, they shit on me all the time. Mm-hmm. But for you... as a black woman, they shit on you extra hard.
Yeah.
They're always saying stupid shit about race. They're saying stupid shit about rape and birth control and all this stuff. So I kind of wanted to just get a little bit of your perspective on, like, you know, I'm always impressed when they'll lose in these gigantic elections and, you know, they lost so bad in 2012. And they all get interviewed and they're like, our policies are sound. We're not changing anything about our policies. You know, it's a messaging thing. We've got to fix our messaging and we have to message ourselves better to women and to minorities. And first off, they never can. You know, they can't go a single day without saying something really fucking stupid.
Man, it's like that work injury counter at your job. It's like 52 days without saying something racist or sexist. Well, yeah. Did you see Fox News today? We're going to have to bring that back to zero.
Oh, yeah. Well, they just had the Republican yesterday just went up and said that spousal rape shouldn't be a crime.
What?
He said, like, if you're in bed and it's your wife and she's wearing a nightgown, like, that's not rape. And it's like, you can't, oh my God,
that is the most asinine thing I have ever heard. Men, don't rape. I don't care if you've been married to this woman for 100 years. No means no.
Well, and, like, I can't. Even because they go through all this sensitivity training, they paid for all these advisors, and I'm like, if I was a handler for the GOP, if I was one of like their staffers who had to prep them,
I don't think you'd get that job.
They would never get me that job.
They'd say no, thank you.
But
sir.
They should hire me because what I would tell them is, I'd say the second anybody asks you anything about rape at all, you say rape is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
No further questions. Right. You just get the fuck out of there, and I'll write you a press release, because any time you say anything about rape, it's going to go badly.
Yeah, there's nothing that you could possibly say that will ever make it okay. Not a single solitary thing. You know, so many women don't even say anything about being raped. Like, it's happened to them, and they just clam up. And that's a problem, too. Because women should speak up so that more fuckheads don't do this. And how dare they say something like that? Your husband? It's appalling. I hate that I'm stuttering, but it's appalling that they would even think to say something like that. Because you're affecting a human. You're affecting their entire life, mentally, spiritually, physically, everything. You're demeaning this person. You're breaking this person down to just their basic body parts. If you treat a woman like she's just a whole, you're a terrible person who should die immediately.
Well, the part that always gets me and is it's how they always talk about people being brainwashed. The Republican Party, like 95% of black people voted for Obama over Romney or whatever the thing was. And, you know, the line is always, they say, get off the plantation. They're like, the Democratic plantation. This is a talking point that they actually use. And they say that the Democratic Party has brainwashed women and minorities to giving them free stuff, they say. And that was the thing after the 2012 election. And it's like, do you fucking hear yourself?
Yeah.
You know? And maybe if there's 95% of a population that's not voting for you, and your response is to just write them off as people who can't think for themselves and who don't just brainwash people who, like, maybe the problem isn't them. Maybe the problem is you. Maybe you're a complete asshole to this entire group of people.
Yeah, to just qualify me as a lemming who's just gonna fall off of this fucking cliff is really not gonna make me wanna... You know what? I will just keep this baby. I was raped by my husband, and I'm gonna have another child because, you know, you're pro-life. Yay! No. Like, no one is going to jump on board. If you're beat over the head... Like, every day of your life, you're told you're stupid, you're told you're inadequate, you're told you're a woman who shouldn't learn to read and shouldn't learn to write, and you're living on a plantation. The word plantation is appalling. One, two.
Well, to be fair, they usually try to get a black conservative to say it. They'll try to get their black friend to say it.
That old Uncle Tom thing. We've seen this.
It'd be like Thomas Sowell or Herman Cain or like one of those guys who they'll say, get it. And then they can all, Bill O'Reilly and everybody can go, see, we're not racist. Herman Cain said it, and we're just agreeing with him that it's the Democratic plantation and people are brainwashed because food stamps are so awesome. That they don't realize that they should be voting Republican. And it's like, no, you guys are just complete assholes to everyone who isn't like crazy old white dudes. And here's the thing I'll say about conservatives. Because again, I think a lot of the Republican Party is in fact racist. And I think a lot of the policies are racist. And I think a lot of them stem from, you know, there was a Southern strategy. Richard Nixon pursued this Southern strategy where you had the Dixiecrats, who were kind of the racist part of the Democrats. They switched over to the Republicans because, you know, it was this very much this strategy of exploiting racism and getting, you know, frustrated whites to vote for policies that would hurt black people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are a lot of, especially like you see these voter ID laws or how they push for, you know, the cuts to food stamps and the cuts to education. They very much frame it as, you know, welfare queens coming to steal your money. It's all this very racist framing that they do to sell these policies to their base. And I don't think, again, it's not that like Republicans are out there, like, I don't think they're scheming about like, oh, you know, we hate black people, how can we go? I think like white conservative Christians are the nicest people on earth when they're dealing with the people who they consider part of their group. Mm-hmm. If they consider you one of them, they'll invite you into their homes and they'll be so nice and they'll be so friendly and they'll have the nicest things to say to you. But I think if they don't consider you one of them, they couldn't give two shits about you.
Yeah, you know? Like how is helping this other group going to benefit me?
Yeah.
And if it doesn't, why do I even care? Oh, because all these people are undereducated and hungry. That's why you should care.
Yeah, and I think in general they've kind of considered like, okay, poor people aren't going to vote for us and college-aged people aren't going to vote mm-hmm. for us and, you know, young single women, you know, they're really gunning more for married women. Kind of the married suburban woman vote is who the Republican Party goes for. And Romney's 47% speech was him pretty much saying like, hey, you know, all these people who are like poor people and stuff, like, fuck them. I don't care about them. And it's like, we can hear when you say that.
Like, did you know? You forget that your mic was on or that you were being recorded in any way, shape or form?
Yeah. And it's just, I'm very much looking forward to the next couple of election cycles where they keep trying to gerrymander down and redistrict so they can keep playing to the same group of like crazy bigoted white people. And as the demographics are working against them and you're seeing a less white country, to keep having to pander to an increasingly small group of those people, they got to keep getting crazier and more racist and more sexist. And it's really funny to see they think they can just message their way out of it. And they can't, man, they can't just help it. You can try all you want, but when that's your strategy, you're going to keep saying racist and sexist shit, and it's going to keep biting you in the ass.
Yeah, it's going to keep pissing off more and more people as the time goes on. And really, those old white people have to die. Like, that's terrible to say, like, oh, well, things won't get better till these people die because they won't see that they need to change. Open up your mind a little bit. Stop caring only about yourself and look at the bigger picture. You know, America is changing. It totally is. And if we keep trying to make it the good old days, it's never going to happen. There's always going to be conflict.
Oh, yeah. And then they're always talking about how we need to go back to the good old day. And then, you know, when they're saying, like, I want my country back. And it's like, well, you know, the 1950s weren't great for everyone.
No, being a woman, period.
Yeah, if you were a woman or if you, like, had to use a separate drinking fountain, like, that wasn't great for them. They just weren't really given a seat at the table in pop culture and politics and everything to, like, actually talk about how shitty it was because, you know, white guys ran the show.
Yeah.
So if you were a white guy, it looked like everything was awesome back then because, like...
Like, you were on the ups. You could have an entire household. One person could work. You could, you know, support an entire family. You had a really good job, a car, the whole, like, white picket fence thing. But still, there was, like, the black dude delivering your milk who got, like, a nickel. Like, have you seen the sketch, the Dave Chappelle sketch?
Oh, yeah.
And I'm G-G-A-R, it's the nickel family. That's exactly what life would be like.
Yeah.
And that's kind of awful.
Oh, yeah. And now it's, like, now white people aren't as in charge anymore. You say some, like, ignorant racist shit, And all of a sudden, everybody is like on your ass about it, mm-hmm. telling you you need to shut the fuck up. And I don't think white people are very used to that.
And that's a really good thing. That's a great strategy because, you know, in the 50s, that never, the power of the internet. There's no way that the whole country could have risen up against someone who had said some outlandish shit then, as opposed to now. Like, that's good to nip these things in the bud. Like, you need to learn when you say terrible things. It's not okay.
Well, shame. Shame is it's a great motivator. It's a great way to change behavior. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, old white guys having to deal with a changing world. Lots of room for comedy.
You know,
lots of room for comedy.
And that's what, hopefully, Sasheer can write sketches about this. And there's two more female writers.
Yeah, two new, are they both, it's black female writers? Mm-hmm.
Leslie Jones is one of them, and I can't recall the name of the other one.
Well, yeah, well, hopefully, we wish them all the best. Hopefully, mm-hmm. SNL will do great things.
Yeah, it's tomorrow. Is the first one, I believe. Her great. First show is tomorrow.
Oh, wonderful. So, yeah, I will watch that, and looks like we're about out of time. But Rashawn, thank you very much for coming by the podcast.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening, everybody. If you like Am I Mad, please go to facebook.com/AmImadPodcast and make it official by liking the page. And please leave a comment so I know if it was good. You can subscribe to new episodes via the iTunes Store or the Stitcher app for your iPhone or Android. You can also find all the episodes on my website, occasionallywrong.com. This has been Am I Mad, and the answer is no.